Welcome to Discovery 1, Revision Lecture 2. Now, first of all, before we get started, does anybody have any questions that they would like me to answer before I get into talking about things? Because this revision session is for you lot. It's not for me. I'm just here facilitating. So has anybody got any questions that they would like to ask that may have occurred to them since listening to last week's revision lecture? You've all listened to last week's revision lecture, he says, hopefully. Yeah, any questions? Nobody has any questions. So, not a sausage.
I have one question to ask, Carrie. And, I was wondering, do you know where the lab making demos for 2007 are? Because I can't seem to find them.
Give me a second. I will just open the website and tell you.
Thank you.
I remember the sausage mnemonic, but I don't remember what it stands for. So.
Sorry, Mr. Drew. For once in my life, I wasn't listening to you. Can you run that past me again? I was just trying to look up this stuff for Paul. What?
Well, that's unacceptable.
I know.
I remember the. I remember the, you know, sausage pizza mnemonic, but I don't remember what it actually stands for. So that's kind of.
Hey, Drew. I can help you out. I can help you out with that if you need it.
Okay. Basically, what you're going to have to do, Drew, is if you're sighted, I'd suggest you write them on the toilet door. But it is physical, data link, network, session, transport, presentation, application. Okay, so now what you've got to do is you've got to grab that little bit out of the recording when it goes up and then just loop it to yourself when you go to sleep and you'll remember. No, that's probably not a good idea.
I like to have weird dreams sometimes, you know.
Okay, it's in the same folder, Paul. It's called Cable Making and Testing. So it does not have 2007 anywhere in it.
Okay, that's what it is. All right, I will definitely.
You can actually tell that because right next to it, it says 2 March 2007.
Oh, 1647. Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for your help. I will definitely look that up and get to work. Thank you.
That's all right. Alrighty. Okay. Now, does anybody want me to go over any of the procedures for converting number bases and stuff? I had a question from Drew, and I don't know if anybody else wants me to rehash some of those conversion process.
The hexadecimal thing would be helpful if you could kind of help me with that one, because that one I'm having a little trouble with. The hexadecimal.
Okie dokie. Alright. So we all know that if we are converting from decimal to binary, we've all done that before. The easiest way to do it is subtract the largest power of 2 from the number, put a 1 or a 0, take the remainder of that subtraction, and then subtract the next biggest power of 2. If the next biggest power of 2 won't subtract, put a 0 and keep reducing the number of powers of 2 until you get down to 0. Everybody remember that conversion process from a few weeks back?
Yes, that's the only one I remember. The other one I don't. Not too well.
Okie dokie. So, say for example we are converting the number 207 to binary. Can I be bothered? Hang on. 207. So 128 goes in, so we put a 1. So 207 minus 128 is...
79.
Thank you, 79. So we then have a 64 will come out, so we put 1, 1, and then 79 minus 64 is 15. So 32 won't go, so we put 0, so we go 1, 1, 0. 79 minus 128 minus 79, hang on. That's 49, so 32 will go. Yeah, I did say 32 would go, didn't I? Or didn't I? Oh, I'm confused. Okay, let's start again. 128. 207 minus 128 is 79, so we put a 1. 79 minus 64 is 15, so we put a 1. Okay, that's right, so we've got 1, 1. Then 32 won't go, so we put a 0. And then we 16 won't go, so we put a 0, so it's 1, 1, 0, 0. And then 15 is the rest of those bits, so you just go 1, 1, 1. 1, yes. So it's 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1 for 207, I believe.
So where do you get that there's 7 digits to use? Is it because of the 3-digit number?
Well, anything above 128, you can... Okay, remember that 2 to the power of 0 is 1. 2 to the power of 1 is 2. 2 to the power of 2 is 4. Dot, 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 dot. 2 to the power of 7 is 128.
Okay. Okay, so the number of powers it goes into determines the number of digits that the number of digits representing the number in binary. Okay.
Yeah, the more the larger the binary number, the more powers of two you're going to need to make up the combinations of that number. So if the number is greater than, hang on. Okay, yeah. If you've got a number over 128, you're going to have 8 bits. Like, if it's under the 256, you're going to have 8 bits for that number over 128. So, the 128 is 2 to the power of 7. So, 7 down to 0 gives you 8 bits. You will have 8 binary bits. And if you don't have 8 binary bits, you've mucked up the conversion.
Well, what goes into 2 to the power of 0? Doesn't that make it a 0 at the end?
2 to the power of 0 is 1. Anything to the power of 0 except for 0 is 1.
Okay, right, cool. Please edit that question out of the recording so I don't look like I failed high school out. Sorry, middle school out.
Look, to be honest with you, Drew, there are plenty of blind people who are absolutely appalling at maths, and there are some people like Taylor who are good at it, but they are the exception to the rule, okay? Most blind people are horrible at maths, and it's a sad but real truth. And we don't hold it against you. What we hope is that you learn something along the way, and you will eventually get a little bit better at it. That's what we can hope for.
Yeah, no, that's good, because that whole concept just slotted very neatly into my head finally, which I knew it would eventually. It's just not quite fitting in, and it just went, oh, okay, that makes sense. So yeah.
So if you think of binary as when you've got like a 1 is when you've got the drum stick on the drum, and a 0 is when you don't. No, just kidding.
Yeah, I love how the Rolands are like, they like, check it out, it's large, drummer-friendly buttons, like we're complete Neanderthals.
I'll just not touch that with a 10-foot barge pole, no, seriously. Of course. Well, there are some that are, I think. I think some of them do need large drummer-friendly buttons.
Yeah.
Okay, so, now, blah, 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 blah. So that's, okay, so now we're doing hexadecimal, okay? So we all remember how to do the binary. You take the largest power of 2, and you subtract it, and then what you've got left is you then subtract the next biggest power of 2, but if you can't subtract the next biggest power of 2, you put a 0 in, and then you go down the next power of 2. So if you want a... If you want to make this easy for yourself, write out a list of powers of 2. So write a little thing that says, you know, have a little line that says 2 to the power of 0 is 1, 2 to the power of 1 is 2, 2 to the power of 2 is 4, 2 to the power of 3 is 8, 2 to the power of 4 is 16, 2 to the power of 5 is 32, 2 to the power of 6 is 64, 2 to the power of 7 is 128. You could write all those down, and you could refer to them so that you'd know which powers you had. If you can manage to do that on... see if there's a mic boost in the output though for it, Grace. There might be a mic boost in the output for it. Sorry, Grace is just fixing some settings over here. Yeah, so you can actually write all those down. Although don't do what Ian did, and he had this this table that went 2 to the power of 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 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, 128, 64, 32, 16, 8, 4, 2, 1. And we sort of said, right, that was good. There'll be a test on that. We reformatted that table. Okay. Now, so that's binary. Now, remember when we said in base 16, we had 16 different symbols. We had 0 to 9, and we had A through F. Actually, check the box in Skype that says don't mess with it while you're in there. A through F. Now, can anybody tell me what E is worth in hexadecimal?
15.
No, Jonathan, but a good guess. It's 14. Because A is 10, B is 11, C is 12, D is 13, E is 14, and F is 15. But good guess. Anybody tell me what C is worth? Sorry, go on, Jonathan.
12. I was going to say, so you take the position in the alphabet like it is the fifth letter, but you got to take one from it to make it 14.
That's right. It's not like Braille or whatever. You can't just go A and E is 15. It's not how it works. It's because
A
is 10. Would be good. But think of it, they're programmers. They're zero-based. They always start everything at zero.
Yeah.
Although you can think of it, if you go zero through 9, and then you figure A, B, C, D, E, F is you know, 1 to 6.
Yeah, it's 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
Right.
Alrighty. Now, the whole point of base 16, apart from confusing the absolute, what out of you, is that it is a compact way of representing binary quantities, and it is easy to convert from binary into hexadecimal. Now, from 0 to 15, can anybody tell me what is the binary for 15? Type it into chat if you want. One more one. You want four ones. So 1111 is the binary for 15, which is all ones, because we have 8 plus 4 is 12, plus 2 is 14, plus 1 is 15. So we're all happy that 1111 is 15. Everybody cool with that for binary?
Yep. I just had to reverse it just for my own assuredness that the math works in it.
That's good. We like it when we all get the same answer. Now, so that means each 4 bits of binary, which is a nibble, which is half a byte, makes up one digit of hexadecimal. So to convert from binary to hexadecimal, you just take 4 bits at a time, convert those to decimal, and then convert that decimal result into the hex equivalent for the symbol. Now, it's very important that if you are... move him down into the lecture theatre and we'll see how he goes. We'll get him to move down. Hey, there we go. I've moved him. There we go, everybody. Curtis is audible. Say hello to everybody, Curtis.
Hello, everybody.
Hurrah! He's back. Alrighty. You could probably go up by a bit more, but I'm not going to break anything today, so you can break that when you feel like it. Alrighty. So, when we're converting the symbols from hexadecimal into binary, so say for example we take the symbol for hex of say B, we say B is worth 11. Yeah, that's right. And if we're going to convert 11 to binary, we say 8 and 2 and 1, so we end up with 1011. Everybody kind of cool with that procedure?
I think I might have gotten it finally.
There you go, you're here, Melanie. All good. Okie dokie. So, we have, with the hex digits. Now, it's very important that when you convert from hex to binary, that each digit of hex must convert to 4 binary digits, okay? So if you're converting the number 1 in from hex to binary, you've got to put 0001. You've got to make each hex digit worth 4 binary positions or you will get the wrong answer. Good news is, guys, though, you don't have to convert hex in the test.
Oh, no.
Hey, be happy, Paul. Be happy. Okay?
This is good. This is a good thing.
Yeah, when I tell you don't have to do something for the test, it's something to be happy about. But it's important that you at least see how the hex works so that when you've done the labs that concern themselves with hex in Chapter 5 or whatever, they don't seem as mucky ass. And I'm gearing up for a whole stack of labs from you real soon. Isn't that right, Drew?
Yes. By the way, speaking of me, I had a question. How do you represent numbers above 15 in hex decimals, like, say, 16?
Ah, now, well, that's a good question. If you want to, can anybody tell him? Actually,
no.
Let's... And can anybody tell him how you'd represent 16 as hexadecimal?
Isn't it?
I think it's 1... 1A. Or, no, 1-6.
No, it's... No, this is 16 as hex. It's 1-0.
I thought he said 60, 6-0.
I'm going to explain it. It's okay, settle down. I'm going to explain it. Here we go. Right. When we get to 0E, or when we get to F, we're at 15, okay? Now, to go above that, we need to say 1-0, which is one lot of 16 plus zero lots of 1. Okay? Now, say we want to convert 17 into hexadecimal. We go one lot of 16 plus one lot of 1, or 1-1, is 17. We want 18, it's one lot of 16, 1, plus two lots of 1, which is 2, so that's 1-2. So say, for example, we have 27. That's one lot of 16 plus 11 lots of 1, which will be 1B.
Right, and 60 wouldn't 60 be 3C?
Well, let's see. 3 lots of 16 is 48, and then we need 12 to get to 60, which would be C. So that is correct. It would be 3C. Well done. So can anybody tell me? Here's a question.
Is that represented by A or B, or is that represented by 0A and 0B? Or is the 0 redundant?
Well, the 0 is if you've only got one digit or whatever and you want to make it a two-digit hex quantity. You could just say A and B for 10 and 11.
Like in base 10? Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, you could have $4.95, or you could have 0000000004.95. Okay, we're going over it again for Grace. 1-0, okay. Remember how when we've got normal numbers, we go 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, okay? And then we get to 10. Now, 10 is 1 lot of 10 plus 0 lots of 1. Everybody happy with that?
Yeah.
And then 11 is 1 lot of 10 plus 1 lot of 1? Yeah, okay, yeah. Now, we've got hexadecimal. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, A, B, C, D, E, F. We're at 15. 1-0 is 1 lot of 16 plus 0 lots of 1. 1-1 is 1 lot of 16 plus 1 lot of 1, because the base we are working in is 16, so whatever we've got to the left of the... Okay, so the right-hand digit is lots of 16 to the power of 0. The next digit across is lots of 16 to the power of 1. The next digit across is 16 to the power of 2. The next digit across is 16 to the power of 3. So each of our digits across is 16 to the power of something. So 1-0 is 1 lot of 16 to the power of 1 plus 0 lots of 16 to the power of 0.
Okay.
So what would 4-8, if 4-8 was in hexadecimal, what would that be in decimal? I'll even help you out by telling you that 4 lots of 16 is 64. How nice am I?
3. That'd be 3-0.
No, we're converting from hex to decimal, so 4-8 in hex.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be...
3.
Yeah, 72.
72, I wasn't going to say.
72.
72?
Okay, 4-8 in hexadecimal, people. 4-8 in hexadecimal. We've got 8 lots of 1. Plus 4 lots of 16. Remember I told you, because I was nice, that 4 lots of 16 was 64? Therefore, you've got 64 plus 8 is 72. Anyone want me to work another one?
How do you pronounce hex numbers? Like, would you, for a two-digit number, would you say 30 or would you say 30?
No, do not say 30. Do not say 14. Do not say 26. Because if you say 26, I'll think you're talking decimal. It's 26.
Right.
And for ambiguity, when you are writing them, you usually write 0 capital X 26 or 26 capital H to show that they're in hexadecimal. Do not say I've got 86 in hex, because you immediately have been... I've contradicted myself. What base am I working in? You don't know. Did I really mean 86 decimal into hex, or did I mean 86 hex into decimal? Let's not go there. Okay. Okay, if we were converting 4A into decimal, can anybody tell me what 4A would be in decimal?
4A would be 4 lots of...
Yeah, so...
4 lots of 1.
No.
And then... Oh,
no.
Sorry.
4 lots of 16.
Oh, we're doing 16. Sorry.
No, 48. We're doing 4A.
No, 64... 4A.
Yeah, that's right.
I know.
Yep.
64 plus A, which is 1, which is 10. in decimal. It's 72.
That's right. That's correct. I think I should be nasty and write up a little practice worksheet for you all after this lecture, and we'll want that submitted by next week, because it would probably be a good idea. We'll even have some binary to decimal conversions. And I'll make them... and I would please ask you all to only use Windows Calculator to check your work, okay? I cannot stop you all from cheating, but I can laugh maniacally if you go for the CCENT and they go, you have a pen and a piece of paper and a reader, and hopefully a pegboard, and you actually have to do these in the actual exam. So it's very important, oh, I'm coming out of Josh's speakers, that you know how to do this procedure, because in the Cisco exam they'll let you have a pen and a piece of paper, and we're pushing for pegboards. But you're not allowed to have a calculator, unfortunately. But luckily, the conversions you need to do will not be anything greater than 255. Okay, now some of you may not be sitting the CCENT exams, and that's okay. That's the entry-level network technician, which is the one you can do after you've done Discovery 1 and Discovery 2. But some of you will, so that's why I mention it. We are looking for... we're trying to push for pegboards, and we're trying to push for... we're trying to push for non-programmable calculators, but we don't think we'll get the latter in, but we can try. Has anybody found a good talking calculator? I mean, I had the Clockulator from years and years ago, and that was absolutely amazing. And then I managed to pick up this really cheap Chinese one that was a calculator, and it played like 10 popular tunes badly. But the calculator worked really well, and it was like $10 from the post office. Has anyone found something that is actually just a standard calculator that doesn't have all the funky stuff on it?
I have a question. Can you do this stuff in Microsoft Excel? Is there a formula that'll let you do it?
Convert from decimal to binary or decimal to hex?
Right.
There is. But you'd have to look through the help to do it. There might be a hex function, or there might be a bin function. I'd really have to open Excel and have a look. But of course, you'd only be using that for checking your work, of course.
Right.
Look, the reason I'm so passionate about people knowing how to actually do the procedure, and I realise that the procedure is a little bit difficult for some people, is because if you are relying on Excel, or you are relying on Windows Calculator or whatever, if you feed numbers in and you manage to feed the wrong numbers into a calculation, you won't have any idea of what the answer should approximately be, so it's very easy to say incorrectly subnet a network. Whereas if you know what the procedure looks like and roughly what numbers you should get out of the whole situation, you will have some way of estimating, and you will actually know whether the answers you've calculated are correct or not. If you wish to use Windows Calculator, as previously discussed, if you're using Windows 7, go into Programmer mode, and then F6, F7, and F8 will convert you between decimal, octal, and hexadecimal. So you can basically press F6, put in a number in decimal, press F8, and it will give you the binary.
Actually, F5 is hexadecimal. Sorry about that.
Is it?
Yes.
Yes, F5.
Yes.
F5 is hexadecimal, F6 is decimal, and F8 is binary. And if you can't remember any of those, look under the view menu. So it says octal F7, decimal F6, they're all under the view menu if you need to look them up. And of course, pressing enter on the one you want in the view menu will obviously select it as well. Now, if you are using Windows, you want to be in scientific mode, okay? So that's Windows XP. Which is what I'm using. I haven't had a problem with it, to be honest, Curtis. Once the answer is up, you just go Jaws cursor, root Jaws to PC, and then insert up arrow. We'll read the result on the calculator.
How do you copy the results?
It's very accessible.
If you're using a laptop layout, that would be caps lock P, caps lock left bracket, caps lock up arrow. We'll route your Jaws cursor to your PC cursor and reread the entry on the result command line. Keying things into the calculator, of course, can be done from the keyboard, or if you want the number pad, obviously turn your number lock on and you can use the number pad for entry of numbers, and then you can use the letters to input hexadecimal and stuff. There are some sighted people that do use the mouse to enter things into Windows calculator. I have never understood why. Alrighty, snap question. What class of network has a subnet mask of 255.255.0.0?
B.
Anybody who said B is correct.
So where do you get class D networks exactly?
Multicast. It's where you have a number of machines listening for a transmission on a network. And, for example, if you're ghosting an image down onto 20 workstations at once, you would often use multicast so that you only have to send out one copy of the packets on the network and all 20 workstations can listen to the multicast traffic. The IP range of class D is from 224 to 240, I believe.
Yeah. I think E starts at 240. I think it's like 224 to 239, actually.
Yeah, that would stand to reason. Yeah, I'd agree with that. So obviously they're multicast addresses. The other thing you can use multicast for often is video conferencing. Now, the idea of multicast is that when you set the TTL, or the time to live on the packets of a multicast packet, it tells you how far the packets are going to propagate. So a TTL of 1 will be inside your own LAN, a TTL of 2 will be inside the country that you're in, and a TTL of 3 is theoretically worldwide. Don't quote me on that, you'd have to look that up, but that tells you how far those multicast packets propagate. One of the problems, however, is that not all routers will forward multicast packets. And in fact, if you are looking at IPTV, in other words, getting your television over the internet and not using torrent sites, then often you need a router with multicast capability to be able to tune into the multicast stream that is being sent out by your ISP.
Another application of that would be like radio. They could use that in radio too.
They could, but the problem with multicast is that because the traffic is flooded out over various network segments, it does take up bandwidth whether you've got anybody listening to the stream or not, which is why they don't tend to use multicast for radio. Okay. Anybody tell me, how many machines can we have on a subnet that contains a subnet mask of 255.255.255.224?
224?
No, Paul. Can anybody even tell me how you'd go about working that out?
Eight.
Nope. The easy way to work this out, guys... No, that's not correct. 254 is not the correct answer. 255.255.255.224. The easiest way to work this out, guys, is to say 256 minus 224 is 32. And there are 30 usable hosts because you've got the network and the broadcast.
Is that how you do subnetting exactly?
There's more to subnetting than just doing that, but to find out how many usable hosts are on a network, you subtract the number from all binary ones, and that will give you the number of hosts that exist on that network. Because remember that the IP addresses are split into two portions. We have the network portion and we have the host portion. It is the subnet mask that tells you how many bits, which are set to 1, are part of the network portion, and how many bits are set to 0 for the host portion. So say, for example, we have a subnet mask of 255.255.255.224. We have 8 ones, 8 ones, 8 ones. We then have 224. So 224 in binary is... 128 plus 64 plus 32. So we have 8 ones, 8 ones, 8 ones, 3 ones, 5 zeros. Hang on, I might have screwed that up. Yeah, I think I am right. Yeah, because 2 to the power of 5 is 32. So that's how many there has to be. Because remember, we've got 8 ones, 8 ones, 8 ones, and 3 ones in the network portion. So we actually have 20... 7 ones, and then we have 5 zeros, because we've got to get to 32. So 2 to the power of 5 is 32, minus 2 is 30. Anyone bamboozled? Anyone not bamboozled?
No, now that I realize I don't know how to do math and that I completely screwed it up here.
It's all good. I've had similar reactions tonight. So
you this, must get a pegboard.
Yeah, I guess. I'm just randomly curious. Does the number of your IP address, can you tell how many routers you're behind based on the class of your IP address, or does that matter?
Nope.
No, that stuff is confined to 24 or American Fugitive or whatever, where this geeky guy's like sitting behind this computer rattling madly on a keyboard and going, "Ah, looks like he's hidden himself behind like 4 routers. I'm just trying to trace out my race route to the destination." Okay, that's just techno babble, and that does not come into this course. Yeah, we need to find him. I'm just trying to route back his packets, but he's routed by satellite. Okay, yeah, so it's very important to know that the subnet mask, and this is very important, has to have all ones on the left-hand side and all zeros on the right-hand side. If you have a mixture of ones and zeros in your subnet mask, it's not a subnet mask and you broke it, okay?
Yeah, but that was, Carrie, that was what you said, 8 ones, 8 ones, 8 ones, 1 1 1, and then 5 zeros, correct?
That was correct, yes.
Okay.
Now, I mean, I could go into how the actual routers do it, and it actually uses a thing called Boolean logic, which you can look up on Wikipedia, but we haven't actually covered what an AND gate is, really. I did sort of talk about it, but what the router does is it actually ANDs the subnet mask with the IP address, and what actually comes out of that is the network address, okay? So I will cover this briefly. This is advanced stuff and it's not in your test. We have a number of different logic gates, okay? We have an AND gate, which means that if both the inputs to the gate are 1, the output of the gate will be 1. So if we picture a faucet if you're in America, or a hose pipe if you're in the UK, or a tap if you're in Australia, and a big loop of pipe hooked up to a sprinkler, but in that big loop of pipe there are 2 taps between the faucet and the sprinkler. Both taps must be open or set to 1 for the water to flow. Does everybody understand that kind of analogy?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, now an OR gate is where we actually have 2 loops of pipe going to the sprinkler, and in each loop of pipe there is a tap. So if either one of those taps is open, in other words, or this one or that one, water will get to the sprinkler. The only reason we're talking about sprinklers here is because it's summertime over there, and eventually you guys might want to go for a jump under the sprinkler or something. We certainly don't here at the moment. It was about 40 degrees Fahrenheit this morning.
Freezing.
It wasn't that cold.
Oh,
it's all reversed where y'all are.
Yeah, we're upside down. Okay, so an OR gate. If either one of the taps is on, water will flow. Okay? If both gates are open, it's an AND gate. If both gates are open with an AND, then the water will flow. Now, an exclusive OR gate, and the only reason I mention this is just for completeness, is either one or the other has to be open. And if one of the gates is open and the other is closed, it will actually let the water flow. But if both are open, the water will not flow, and if both are closed, the water will not flow. Has anybody seen those rooms where you can walk into the room at one end and flick a light switch down and the light comes on, and then you walk to the other end of the room and you flick the next switch down and the light goes off, and then you come back from the bathroom because you're watching 24 and you flick the first switch up and the light comes back on, and then you finish watching 24 and you walk back through the other end of the room and flick the next switch up and the light goes off? Has anybody ever seen those?
Totally blind person's nightmare.
Not if you got good travel techniques.
Yeah, my house.
Not if you don't remember the lights on or off in the first place.
May I suggest that if anybody who has a Symbian mobile phone, check out The Voice, www.thevoice.com. It is free, and it will actually make noises, and you can use your phone camera to tell whether lights are on or not. And no, there's no iPhone app. Although, does the app... Hang on.
Do you even have a camera?
Okay. We don't know whether the iPhone runs Java apps, so I'll find out later whether you iPhoners can run the Java app with a camera. Sorry, did you ask something, Drew?
Oh, yeah. I didn't even realize the iPhone had a camera.
Yeah, it does. Not a very good one. It's only 1.3 megapixels. It will run on Windows mobile devices as well. The Java application will... No, the new iPhone's got a much bigger camera. But it will run on Windows mobile phones as well. So if you've got
got a 5 megapixel camera, you just have to laugh.
If you've got a Motorola Brick or a Philips Boat Anchor or one of those Windows mobile phones that can run Java, you can certainly put the voice or... is it the voice? No, it's seeingwithsound.com. Isn't it www.seeingwithsound.com? Yeah, the program is called The Voice, but it's www.seeingwithsound.com, which I will type into chat. There's a PC version that works with a web camera, too.
I might investigate that, Carrie.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I might investigate it.
It will work for people who are vision impaired and have been all their life, but it's also really good for people who've had some sort of sight because you can get sort of an image of what it's trying to show you. And they've got different sounds you can listen to, like it'll show you a fence and it'll show you what the fence sounds like. If you're running the PC version or even if you're running the phone version, you can get a better indication of the panning. If you're wearing headphones, there is an option on the phone one, and I can't remember what the option is, where if your speakers are actually sideways, you can actually press a button and it'll turn the image sideways so that the sound pans from left to right. Okay, that's got nothing to do with subnetting, but there you go. Right, so what actually happens is the computer takes the subnet mask and it takes the IP address and it ANDs them together. So it looks at the bits, and where there's a 1 and a 1, it sets the bottom to 1. Where there's a 1 and a 1, it sets the bottom to 1. Where there is a 1 and a 0, it sets the bottom to 0. So if you AND the subnet mask with the IP address, the subnet mask will leave as many of the bits that are set to 1 in the subnet mask will be left alone in the IP address, and then the bits that are set to 0 in the subnet mask will be turned off. So you end up with a case where your host address is left with all of the... Sorry, your network address is left untouched, and your host address is set with all of the bits set to 0, and that is your network address. We'll probably recover that again in CCNA 3, and we do a little bit of it in Discovery 2. So we'll see how we go with that. Now, does anybody have any questions about wireless, the OSI reference model, cable lengths, anything like that? Or is everybody just really confused as to what bits to study? Or does everybody want to try the practice final in the next week or so and come back? I would just like to state here that practice final, it does not affect your mark. Practice. It does not affect your mark. So we might try and put the practice final up and see if anybody wants to do the practice final.
And if you are in ITE1, if you could please avail yourself of our practice final, that would be amazing, because we'd like to actually see what you do and what you need review on and have a review for you guys.
Yeah,
and
if you do the practice.
If you do that like pretty soon here, that'd be great, because then I can look at your scores and see what you need review on and incorporate what you need review on into the review that will probably run for the whole class at some point.
Now, with ITE1, I can assure you that there is a question in the final that asks you to order the steps of the printing process, okay? So you have been warned, and I'll be saying this tomorrow, you must know what order all of that cleaning, conditioning, developing, fixing... so you've got to know. And if you don't know, then, hey, I don't teach ITE1, I don't need to know.
Then you fail the entire course.
No, just one question.
No, to be honest, if I had the steps in front of me, I'd be able to look at them and go, yeah, it's this, 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 and this. But I don't have all six of them in front of me, so I can't actually remember what they're all are. But there's cleaning, conditioning, what's the...
delays, developing.
Developing, that's what I said.
No, you said fusing and fixing and writing.
Actually, you haven't got...
No, Will. Cleaning, confusing, right?
Yeah, you're confusing.
Writing.
Writing, developing. Fixing.
No, P. No, delay, trouble, T, transferring, fusing.
So there you go. Grace doesn't really know them either.
No. I did that last year.
Let the record show.
Hey, but if I saw them in front of me, I could put them in order correctly. I just did, so.
If I saw them in front of me, I could put them in order. Well, actually, I probably couldn't.
Yeah, so fair enough. Go study them.
So that's one question in the final. You've got to know which order they come in. Constant care will prevent, what is it? Trouble forever. That's garbage. I mean, if you've ever owned an HP printer, constant care, it doesn't matter. Eventually, it's going to clag up and turn into a brick. And so will the Epsons and the Canons, in my experience. In fact, you know, constant care, noony, and then one of the ink tanks leaks, and that's the end of it. That's just been my experience with bubble jet, but that's, you know, maybe we get bad bubble jets down here in Australia.
These places, I mean, they're not in the business to sell printers. They're in the business of selling cartridges.
That's exactly right.
I could be. It's probably
someone's keyed up. You are.
Hold on, let me. This thing has just clagged up nicely.
All right. That's better. Now, let's see. So we're going to try and put the practice final up, and we're going to make sure we have the descriptions up for the practice final, and we'll announce it on the lists. And you guys can try the practice final. It doesn't matter what you get in the practice final, but it will tell you what you do know and what you don't know and what you need to review. Is there anything else anybody wants me to cover? Any particular bits of the course that you found confusing, or did you just find all of it confusing? In that case, I don't know. Put the lectures on while you're asleep or something. Or we can cover various aspects next week. There is a fair bit in these courses, and they do take a couple of questions from each chapter in the final. All right, guys. Well, And good morning, Rose, who you have just come in on the tail end of the review lecture.
My apologies.
Oh, that's all right. The recording will be going up, and you can always grab the recording. Now, guys, unless I get some more questions or unless people want me to talk about anything else, and I'm pretty serious about this, there will be no more review lectures, okay? This is it. So if there are no questions, no queries by next week, no more review lectures. Because you guys don't have anything for me to talk about.
I understand that fully, Carrie, and I will make sure. I will do what I can to keep things going.
If you guys come up with questions after next week and you send them in, we'll announce that there'll be another review lecture or whatever. So it's not like if you don't have anything, you'll never get another one. If we get questions and stuff after that, we'll have one at a later time.
That's right. I mean, if we have no questions, no queries, we can schedule a review lecture, which will be on the regular time that these are, and we will announce it on the mailing lists, and we will have that review lecture. But if we do not have any questions or clarifications, there will not be a review lecture. That is not to say that you cannot get us on Skype. We are always on Skype in when we are at work. And if anybody has any questions they need to ask us individually, we are always Skypeable. If you need a hand with your labs, Skype us. If you can unkey, by the way, Paul. I know you've got something to say, but I haven't finished yet. Thank you. Also, if you wish me to go through the exams with you, or Grace can go through the exams. Actually, I can. You can get in touch with me on Skype, and I will go through and tell you which questions you got wrong. Okay, so all of these services are available to you if you wish to take advantage of them.
And if you want another time besides working hours, you can email us and we will set up a time to meet with you on Skype.
That's right. We will drag ourselves out of bed at 1 o'clock in the morning if necessary, if it's been prearranged, and chug down a coffee and then come up on Skype and talk to you about whatever difficulty you might be having. That's the sort of dedicated folk that we are.
Carrie, I have a question to ask of you. I've found it very difficult to get in touch with y'all on Skype sometimes. Like,
email us.
Just email y'all and y'all will respond.
Email us. We will respond. We'll set up a time with you to work. And Friday mornings for me during social are absolutely fine. I can work with you on labs. like we did a couple weeks ago. And also, you know, whatever. We'll figure out a time to work with you. You just have to email us. We're not always on Skype because we're at home and doing other things. If you want us, and it may not be that night, but if you want to set up a time to work with us, you email, and we will definitely help you.
We actually have a work Skype and a home Skype, and the work Skype is signed in when I'm at work, or it's signed in when students email me and they are, you know, they want me to come on and talk to them and ask a question or whatever. Now, I did that for a very good reason. We used to have some of our students that would instant message me at 11 o'clock at night, which was just about when I was about to start counting sheep, and they would ask me these questions and I was too tired and worn out to answer them, but if they had actually organized a time with me, I would have made myself available to be on Skype. So no, you do not see us on Skype very often outside the work hours, because we are on the work Skype when we are at work. I had thought of setting up voicemail on my work Skype, but it's not particularly accessible and under Skype 4 anyway, and it would probably make more sense for you guys to email and set up a time for me to talk to you, or for Grace to talk to you, and we will make ourselves available for any tech support you may have. So, for example, as Curtis has found out from experience this morning, we have certainly pulled out all the stops and temporarily sorted out his audio issue. And we're happy to do that for people. We are happy to assist people. We are a resource for you guys to use. And if you call in the next 20 minutes, you'll get a set of steak knives. No, seriously, we are here to help you.
With that being said, Grace and Carrie, I have some things I need to talk to y'all about, but I will send those to y'all in an email.
And
I'm not very graceful with the offline instant messages. Does it just drop them?
Mine? With the instant messages? It shouldn't. I have persistent messaging.
Okay, yeah. I don't know what... So I was wondering what happens if you instant message someone who's offline. Does it just...
I'll get it next time you come online.
Maybe. Not with Skype, I think. I think with Skype.
Yes,
with
Skype.
If you shut it down, they're gone.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, Rose?
No, what I was going to say is, if somebody sends you an offline message and you come on, then you see it. But yeah, if you dismiss the chat, then obviously you're never going to see it again.
Yeah. If I miss the chat, it's nothing personal. I probably just didn't see it. I probably walked away from the computer and just did not see your window pop up. And for that, I am completely sorry, but it's not you. It's not personal. I just didn't see it.
We actually have a policy here that says if you cannot reach, the email is preferred. If you can reach people by email, it is stored in inboxes and we will see it. Okay? So if you can IM us, that's all well and good. But you can email us and you have the assurance of it being stored in our inbox, and we will do our best to get back to you. A lot of people think that if we don't respond to an instant message, we're just being horrible and stuff. We're not. We might not just have instantly not got it. Okay? So that's how that works. If we are online and you can IM us, more power to you.
Well, just for a little tip, anybody who hasn't read the new document once they first enroll in the course, they need to do that.
They all had to, because I gave them a scavenger hunt, and they basically ensured that, well, I don't know if they understood it, but they at least had to read it, so.
I'm just giving a word of wisdom here, if you don't mind.
No, that's fine, and we're glad about that, because that's what that document was supposed to do. Okay, anybody got any questions?
I have one other thing to say.
All right, we'll let Grace say her other thing, and then we will...
If you have stuff that's not class-related, if we've got time, we'll definitely try to help you, but it's not guaranteed. If it's class-related and it's tech support relating to the class, we're always going to help you right away and get that done for you. But if it's not class-related, although we'll try our best to help you, the discuss list might be a better option to send that to, because we've got 150-odd subscribers who are willing to help with that.
And that is a very good resource. Often on the discuss list, you will see people who are in your time zone that will respond to your question. You will find people who are in other time zones that will respond to your question. So if you are interested in asking a question that you don't believe is entirely course related, you can put it on the discuss list. However, I must stress two things. One, if anything blows up, you are completely liable. If you follow advice on the discuss list and things go bad, we do not warrant the technical accuracy or quality of the information, although we do our best to make sure that it is complete and accurate. The second thing is we do not permit jokes or advertising on the discuss list. And the other thing we frown about is unedited forwards. Okay? We are very harsh on people that forward things like Nigerian 415 scams or any of those sorts of things. We're pretty tough on that, and I'll be deleting them from the list archives.
But I'm afraid that if I don't forward this message to at least 15 people, then I'll lose luck.
Unfortunately...
we don't want to hear it.
Unfortunately, hey. Drew, how you feel and how afraid you are is your problem, not ours, okay? So you just don't forward and be afraid.
Carrie. Mm-hmm. Carrie. I don't know, but I've been corresponding with Armando about OpenDNS, and the message that I got on the discuss list regarding that was it had no subject line.
Because he didn't put one.
Yeah, that's unfortunate when you're going through the archives. I need to reply to that. In fact, that was the message that I had remembered to actually have a look at. Now, I'm not 100% sure on this. I'm going to have a look. I think you've actually got to pay for an account to be able to block stuff on OpenDNS, or can you block the large categories? I'm just trying to think.
Ask Jackie. She uses it.
No, I'll just look up the website. That's easy enough to do. But yeah, so basically that's an example of a message that we're going to try and help him out with. We will be replying to that once we have some information, or perhaps somebody else will jump in and reply before I even get to it. And that discuss list is a goldmine of information. If you have a subnetting question, post it to the discuss list. If you have a question regarding, I don't know, virtual machines, post it to the discuss list. If you have a question relating to the course that's general, like where can I find such and such a lab or whatever, that could also go to the discuss list, but if you don't want it to go to the discuss list, it can go to the instructors. But that discuss list is a very powerful tool, and sadly, most groups of students completely underutilize that discuss list. Now, we are keeping it as a mailing list because we think web forums are bad and evil, and we would really not like to move to web forums if we could help it.
Hate them. And you know what? I think it's better as a mailing list because more people will see it and more people will respond to it.
Exactly. And as our time is limited, we do have some very, very knowledgeable students that have been through the course before, and they can certainly answer your questions and assist you with your questions and queries that you may have. All right, last chance. Any other questions? Any questions at all before I hit stop?
Yeah, one. Do we ever need to refer to the standards of 802.11, the different varieties of it?
Yep.
Yep, you need to know the difference between A, B, G, and N, or BANG, if you want to rearrange the acronyms. You need to know that A runs on 5 gigahertz. You need to know that B and G run on 2.4 gigahertz. You need to know that B is 11 megabits per second and G is 54 megabits per second, and N has a theoretical maximum of 300 megabits per second using MIMO technology. Yes, Paul?
Well,
you also need to know that 802.11 or 802.11.3 is the Bluetooth standard, I believe.
No, it's not. It's 802.15.
Oh, fair enough. 802.13 Firewire.
What's Bluetooth?
That's the, I think that's 802.15, I think. Yeah, Paul, we're waiting.
Okay, I was wondering, about the whole thing with the ramifications of my taking this course and stuff. You know, I was wondering about that. And I was wondering if maybe I could get with y'all later on about that. Maybe Thursday or sometime.
We have a lecture on Thursday morning, but possibly after lecture. And I've already got an appointment with somebody before lecture, because they got to me.
No, I'm talking about Thursday night, my time.
Yep, I can talk to you about that.
Okay, thank you.
Random, what's 802.3U?
That is the standard for unshielded twisted pair.
Ah.
Now, the other thing I'd point out to people, if you don't know what these standards are, obviously not in the middle of your exam, but you might want to look at whatis.com, and you feed the standard into whatis.com, and it will tell you what it is. It's very cool.
And they've got a good list in the Discover curriculum, I think in the wireless section of what the standards are.
Also, do not underrate the glossary. The glossary is your friend, and it is accessible. We made sure. Cisco actually made us make sure that it was accessible. Now, just a reminder that the exams have to be done by the 31st of July, so there is still quite a ways away until you actually have to do the exams. Keep that in mind. However, do not submit your labs on the 30th of July if you want a chance at resubmitting them. If you submit your labs after, say, the 29th of July, we will mark them once, and whatever we mark them as goes into that mark book. So it's in your interests to submit your labs as soon as possible.
So submit labs by 31st of June, right?
Yeah, July 15th if you want to get into the drawing. You've got that much time, and if you get them in by then, you'll at least get another shot at doing them, at least one, depending on how quick you are. And you know what? I took the Discovery course last semester. You'll be wanting to resubmit a few of those labs, I do believe.
So anybody who hasn't done their labs, now I must stress, if you do not complete your labs, I cannot pass you.
I understand fully, and I'm gonna.
You're
I'm
doing
gonna
well, Paul,
work.
With the labs. You're at least submitting some.
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm doing
fairly well.
Well,
yes.
Yeah,
you're submitting labs.
We have a number of students
doing
not
poorly.
Not necessarily on this recording, but we have a number of students. Now, if you're sitting at home listening to this recording, it is now time to start feeling guilty. Labs, 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 labs. Okay, we need those labs. If you are doing this course, we would really like to see those labs submitted by the 30th of June. I mean, you could try submitting them by the 31st of June, but I don't think I'll be around to receive them on that date. Labs, 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 labs. Do not put them off. Seriously, guys, if you sit down and knuckle down and spend 15, 20 minutes doing a lab here and a lab there, you will get them knocked over. If you sit and procrastinate and go, oh, yeah, I'll do them next week will never come, and neither will your certificate, okay? So that's really, this is an adult education course. That is, you know, that is as harsh as we can be. I can't call your mum up and tell her that you're not doing your labs, or your parents and you know, invite them in for an interview, okay? This is as you know, mad as we get about the labs, okay? Labs important. Please try and do by the 15th of July if you want to go in the draw for the prize.
Yeah. I mean, even if you submit them and don't try not to rush on them. You've got time now to sit down and do a really good job on your labs if you want to do them and do them well. If you submit them and you get them wrong, well, then at least now you have the chance to redo them.
You know, even in community college, if you're a week late on submitting a lab, you will not be able to do, or not by lab, I mean, like a worksheet or something that's assigned, you just won't get credit.
That's so, right. And if you have...
pretty lax by comparison.
If you have a genuine reason why you cannot submit the labs on time, we are happy to make arrangements. And if there is something serious that goes down that prevents you from submitting your labs by the due date, we are certainly willing to take that into consideration. Okay, but I should have seen labs for up to chapter 6 or 7 for most students. Okay, now there may be reasons why that hasn't happened, but I'm not seeing as many labs as I really should, and I've got a very empty looking grade book here. So, doesn't matter, belt your guide dog and get the lab out of it. We do not condone belting guide dogs, by the way, but if the dog ate the lab, either do the lab again, or, do the lab again.
Control P, print.
You don't even have to print them, all you do is email them.
Guide dog ate the flash drive. That.
Now, unfortunately, the other thing that I want to mention is that if you may feel these labs are boring and tedious, now if you think you know it all, organise a time to Skype me up and prove it to me. I'll give you recognition of prior learning on the labs and you won't have to do it. But I'm going to ask you some pretty curly questions and you're going to have to prove that you do know all this stuff before I will actually let you off on the labs. So you can get recognition of prior learning if you do know it all. But if you don't do that and you don't do the labs, you don't get a significant certificate even. There we go. End of rant. I can't make it any clearer than that.
And you probably don't know it all. So if you really want to try for that, make sure you really, really, really know your stuff and have done all of the hands-on router stuff.
Speaking of the router stuff, I don't know what I'm going to do with regards to that, because I don't have access to the equipment.
You don't need it. You can write a theoretical lab as to what would happen if you had access to the equipment. And if for some reason you can't do that, then perhaps one of your technical colleges could give you access to a WRT 310 or similar to do the lab on. That would be something that you would need to ask them about.
Just and we've spoken about this.
For pretty much all of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
$30, yeah.
All right. Now, any other questions before we go? Look, if you don't get your labs done, you can re-enroll in the course. We are not going to shun you forever. We're just probably going to double rouse on you the next time through to try and get those labs in. But if anybody else has any other questions before we hit stop, we'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, you can email us or talk to us on Skype. And yes, Taylor, I know I've got a set of unmarked labs from you. I will mark them very soon.
And Gary's got one.
And yeah, he has too, so I'll mark his labs too. All right, I'm hitting stop.